Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Your Vibes Podcast. Everybody's got a vibe and a story to tell. Here's this one. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Your Vibes Entertainment. Your Vibes Entertainment is Middle Tennessee's premier hospitality entertainment consulting company. If you or your business are in need of a mobile DJ, group entertainment like trivia, karaoke, or bingo, or you just need a professional MC to help coordinate your event's day of logistics, we have you covered. It's no work and all play when you hire Your Vibes Entertainment. You can trust us to bring top-of-the-line sound equipment, lighting, and a professional attitude to any event you are hosting. If you are interested in boosting your revenue, showcasing your company, or just want to provide high-vibe entertainment for your family, friends, employees, or clients, please contact us on Facebook or Instagram at Your Vibes Entertainment. Shoot us an email at yventertainmentservicesllc@gmail.com or reach out to the owner, Michael, directly at 615-330-3236. Thanks, and always remember, stay vibey, my friends. All right, 3, 2, 1, and we're off. What's up, everybody? We're back from a little bit of a break. I've got a couple episodes I'm going to drop before this. I had Anna Claire come out today on the 11th. I've got one other short one coming out before, but Mr. Wesley Otts is joining us today. How are you, buddy?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Good. Enjoying this weather. I'm glad it's not snowing or raining. It's finally sunny. You know,
we
got hit with that snow. Did y'all get any sledding in?
Yeah, we got a little bit in. Just had one of my daughters. We went and did some sightseeing, and I was teaching her the do's and don'ts of driving on snow.
Oh, there you go. How'd that work out?
Well, scared her half to death a couple times, but it was fun.
I can imagine. So how old is your daughter?
She is 14.
Okay, cool. Getting behind the wheel early then.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to do it with a bunch of them. Got one that's, one that's 16, one that just turned 15, and she's 14. Got 2 11-year-old daughters right now.
Good Lord.
And then a bun in the oven.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations on that. Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Okay. You're going to have your hands full, son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what we was thinking. Crazy, starting over.
You're going to repopulate Dixon at some point. That's so silly. Yeah, I think it's good to get kids behind some sort of motorized vehicle or something when they're early. I know I started riding four-wheelers when I was like 12 or 13, and getting out there in the mud and learning how to kind of spin out and do donuts and control everything is just massive. I mean, mm-hmm. The amount of wrecks and people were having in the snow, and I had to drive in it quite a bit just going back and forth, but you'd slip a little bit. It's just kind of muscle memory at that point.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like I tell my kids, and us growing up doing the things we did, we knew what stupid felt like.
Yeah.
And we knew not to do it or how to avoided it as best we could, I guess.
Yeah, if you're gonna be dumb, you got to be tough, right? And mm-hmm. I'm sure that we've had our fair share of accidents and run-ins with situations that were not necessarily fully desirable, but we survived
anyway. And we learned from them.
And we learned from them, and we can now teach our children them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you got to let them go through that stuff, though. Yeah. I've sat there and watched both of my kids' demise there for a little bit of like, this isn't going to end well. But
yeah, I mean, all we can do is give them the forewarning of our previous experience with whatever stupid activity they're right. doing. And if they choose to do it, just they got to know what it feels like, I guess.
Yeah, you do. There's, I'm sure you were the same way with your parents, but there's a little bit of a rebellion that goes on. And mm-hmm. we don't know what we're talking about, and it's not going to be as bad as you think it is. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Go out and do whatever you feel like you're going to do.
Call me when you, when you need help.
I need to bail you out of jail or get you out of the hospital, whichever one it may be. I'll be there to help you for sure. So as most everybody may know, Mr. Otts is owner-operator of Otts Barbecue in Burns. So thought we'd bring him in here and kind of just chat a little because Burns is a special place in my heart. I think that's got a lot of potential, and to kind of operate there is really, I guess, how many other, there's the Mexican restaurant, right?
And that's it.
And that's it.
It used to be Sir Pizza, but
That's right.
It was right after we opened, they moved somewhere else. I heard they're, well, I don't know if I need to put somebody else's information out there. I heard they found another location.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I didn't even realize they'd moved. I knew they were over there for a while. Where were they before that? Weren't they?
It was right next to the Mexican restaurant.
Okay. That's right. That's what it was. Yeah. And then I guess that park on 96, are they thinking about doing something with that too?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of potential in just in that whole area, and I think that Burns, given its proximity to Nashville and the type of clientele that, you know, live in that area, could definitely be deserving of some more amenities than what they've got right now.
And, oh, for sure.
I'm sure that you, given there's very little competition in that area, are experiencing some pretty good traffic, and just want to bring you in and kind of get your story and let everybody hear kind of how Wes got into the, we can maybe start just a little bit before and what you had going on and kind of why you fell in love with barbecue. We can go from there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been cooking as long as I could reach a grill, you know, with my dad and grandpa, and then, you know, cooking in the kitchen with my mom. So I'd learned the best of both worlds. So, but, I was in the concrete business before I jumped into this, which we found it, and, you know, been the whole, you know, the whole living your dream thing and instead of somebody else's, you know, it was real heavy on me, I guess. And then, you know, so I started making the barbecue sauce again, and we were setting up at ball fields, and, you know, used that to pretty much get the money that we needed to open up. I mean, we had to dip into the savings quite a bit.
Yeah.
But that got us going, and it was just going to be a, you know, open up whenever we could kind of thing, kind of not really a hobby, but as a side hustle, sure. I guess. And then things just didn't work out at work. You know, we just decided to part ways, and we threw all the eggs we had in that basket. And I mean, it's worked out ever since.
That's awesome.
And it's probably the best move that we could have ever made. It was terrifying. It was extremely terrifying.
Is this going to work or not? Yeah.
Like, I hope my food doesn't suck. But no, I've practiced a lot and messed up a lot of food to get it to where it is now. And I mean, but I'm still learning every day on how to make it better and
sure,
and how to do stuff. But being in that spot over there, I'm pleasantly shocked at how good the community's been to us, because, you know, we're not on the main road. We're tucked off back in that little hole at the old T-ball field. And, you know, there's no foot traffic.
Sure.
I mean, it's all of our customers have been word of mouth.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, and, you know, Facebook advertising, obviously, but that's been our sole source of advertisement is Facebook and
social
word of mouth.
Media,
and,
yeah. That's awesome. And that's a good thing about a small town too, man. And I know you do get out in the community as well too and do some catering and stuff, but kind of want to jump back into the barbecue sauce as far as kind of the genesis of the whole thing. So is that something that is a family recipe, or is that you made it up and tested and tried it?
It's not a family thing. Hopefully it'll continue to be a family thing with my kids. I've toyed around with a whole bunch of barbecue sauces and used my wife and kids as guinea pigs. You know, I tried to do a peach barbecue sauce, an apple barbecue sauce. They really turned into like just barbecue flavored applesauce.
Yeah.
So those didn't work out that well. Then ended up with this one, and it hadn't changed it from there. But that was the thick barbecue sauce we have. That's the one I always made. And then Victoria broke the news to me that she didn't like thick barbecue sauce. She liked vinegar barbecue sauce. So I tested a few batches, and probably about the third or fourth batch, whenever she went, that's good. I was like, okay, I'm not changing it. Write it down. That's what the vinegar sauce is.
That's what it's going to be.
Yep. So anybody that likes the vinegar sauce, thank Victoria for that.
Okay. See, there you go. And what about the label on there? I feel like I remember something. Did one of your kids draw that?
She's 16 now. My 16-year-old daughter drew the label that's on the sauce.
Cool.
She said it was a picture of me. Which I did a poll. She did four different ones, had two that were supposed to be my heads, and then two that was a pig head.
Okay.
And then, you know, we posted online, told everybody to take a vote, and, you know, they picked the one that what it is. But I did make my daughter change the beard because one of the pigs had a better beard than my picture did, so I had her put that beard on me.
That's so silly. Yeah. Well, now she's famous.
Yep.
That's awesome.
She's already asking for royalties.
I'm sure she is. Well, quite the businesswoman there. There you go. I know that there's kind of different traditional styles or different styles of how people can barbecue, and I've had a couple of barbecue people on the podcast prior to, but what's something that you kind of, I guess maybe something that's a little different than what other people are doing that makes you stand out?
Well, like with my brisket, I do a Texas style brisket. It's like whenever I was toying with it, I think my brisket rub had like 7 ingredients in it, and I just couldn't get it right. Then I finally just, I went back to the basics and salt and pepper.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy. And that's the way it is now. And I practiced on a chuck roast.
Okay.
Instead of messing up $100 piece of meat, I'd test it on or trial my, cooking temps, times, the amount of rub I put on it. On a $20 piece of meat. That way, mm-hmm. if I messed it up, or cooked it too long, you got shredded beef barbecue.
Yeah.
Or you can do a poor man's brisket with one of those. Cook a chuck roast just like a brisket, and then you get the same texture, same flavor as you would if you did a brisket.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How about that? And I was watching, I forgot, it was something with Gordon Ramsay the other day. He had taken a trip down to Texas and was eating some Texas barbecue, and that's the same thing as he asked what season was on there, and he was like, just salt and pepper. You get mm-hmm. a good piece of meat, and you cook it right. You don't really want to, put A1 on a good steak kind of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't cooked right.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you get all the flavor out of the meat and the cooking process on everything as well, too. And so being out there in that spot, what's your... I guess, did you have a starting menu and then have kind of shaped it to your clientele, or do you rotate things at all, or how does that look?
We started out, just basic. We had ribs, pulled pork, and whole chickens, and then, I had my sides, mm-hmm. Which I just had green beans, baked beans, potato salad, and slaw. That's how we started out. Then we got the hang of that, and then we'd add, I started out doing brisket one Saturday a month. And then that first Saturday I did it, every other day we were open after that, people were asking for brisket, so it became an everyday item.
Cool.
And then, the ribs, they stayed an everyday item, but with the price of everything going up, I had to kind of knock them back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, with that small place, I don't really have a stove or a way to cook anything inside, so I can't cook 20 racks of ribs and hope I sell them that day.
Sure.
So, I moved them to... just Fridays and Saturdays, and I only do a limited amount each day just because I pride myself on cooking everything fresh.
Yeah.
And I don't like re-warming anything up like my kids. I thought they'd hate barbecue by now, but they don't. They'll eat it every day.
Cool.
If I let them. But I try the best I can to keep everything cooked fresh daily. So.
Well, it seems to be working out.
Yeah.
I know that recently, with all the craziness going on, there's been some issues with the meat prices and meat availability and anything like that. Did that hit you pretty hard?
It did, because, we were running wide open mm-hmm. every weekend, selling out every weekend, and I didn't sit down and do any of my cost analysis or look at anything for probably 3 to 4 months, and it kind of got my attention. I was like, something's not adding up. Our books ain't adding up. Like, what's going on? And I dug into it, and I ran for about 3 months when the prices jacked way up in the air, and I didn't change any of my prices just because I didn't pay attention to it. I didn't look at it. I was just looking at how much, get it out, get it out, get it out, get it out. And then once I seen that, I was like, oh, man, I'm losing a lot of money on everything.
Sure.
With the rib prices and the price I had them at, with what I was getting them in the beginning, it was fair market price for them, everything. But the price that they went up to, like I was doing baby backs at the time.
Hmm.
And I know that's everybody's favorite. I wish to God I could bring them back, but they're still kind of expensive. But, per the algorithm, I would have had to essentially charge like a minimum of $38 to show a profit on one rack of ribs.
Wow.
And I look at it as I'm not you know, I wouldn't do that to be like, oh, my ribs are the best in the world, blah, blah, blah. But just, you know, anybody that has a business, you're in it to make money.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't feel right charging somebody $38 for a rack of ribs.
Sure.
So I went back to spare ribs, and, you know, because they're a little bit cheaper cut, and some people like spare ribs better.
Yeah.
Because you get the rib tips off of them, and you can do all kinds of stuff.
A lot of flavor
them.
That can be had in those way. Yeah. So do you have like a food vendor, or are you going to purchase your meat at, you know, Costco's or?
I use Sysco for all of my meats.
Cool.
You know, paper goods, we get most of them through there, but we get a lot from Sam's Club. Paper goods here in the, you know, like the last probably 2 months, that's been a hot commodity to get your hands on. Like our 6 ounce cups that we have our sides in.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't get them for 2 months. They were always out of stock everywhere.
Wow.
It was paper goods was hit real hard.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's just the little moving parts and pieces that people don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dealing with a lot of the downtown business owners, it was nuts. I mean, there was, you know, you go eat lunch somewhere, you go in to talk to somebody, and they'll get in a side conversation with somebody else, another business owner down there. And, you know, sometimes they were buying cups, you know, if somebody had an overflow, they were buying cups off other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody would get a shipment and they'd all kind of disperse around there. Who's getting the cups?
Yeah.
And we'll, you know, we'll spread the love on this. And I just got to think, it's just so funny that, you know, all these little moving parts and pieces to a business, you know, rely on a much greater chain. And if there's a kink in that chain anywhere, everybody just is a little bit disrupted and
it has to make
some changes for sure.
Yeah. It makes it tough. Like, Ever since we took wings off the menu, every weekend people have been asking us to bring wings back, and I could, but just the price of wings, you know, they went from $90 a case to $176 a case, and they're slowly coming back down. But you know, I don't know. You have to charge $1.75 a wing, and if I go out and buy wings, I'm like $1.75 a wing. I'm good. I'll get a burger or something,
sure,
you know,
sure.
But I was thinking about for the Super Bowl, because they have come down a little bit, thinking about, you know, making a post and seeing if I can get X amount of wings pre-sold, then I'll bring them back for Super Bowl parties, you know.
There you go.
Stuff like that, because I can't, because last year we did 1,700 wings for the Super Bowl, and my wings, they're not frozen, they're not pre-battered, nothing. They're raw. I brine them, I season them, I smoke them, and then I fry them to order.
Okay.
Just to crisp the skin back up.
Mm-hmm.
And doing 1,700 wings, I mean, that's
a lot.
I could have sold another 300 after that with people that were coming to try to get some, and I was like, sorry, I don't have any more.
Yeah.
But you know, I just couldn't buy 1,700 wings this year and hope I sell them. You know,
sure.
Just because the price that they're at.
You know, and it's planning for stuff like that too. It's crazy because you just never know. You know, like we were talking before we started, is that the brewery obviously has never been open. They've just been bought out, never been open on Monday, and they've started serving food. And you know, I got wind that there wasn't many people there, and then I walked in at like 9, and it was packed, and they were just slinging food everywhere. I was like, oh God, I hope she prepared, you know, for a full house full of people. You just never know when that many people are going to walk in, and of course you've got a perishable product on the shelf,
mm-hmm.
So. It's a very tender rope to walk for sure. And
yeah, because like there's some weekends where I can't get the food out the window fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some weekends where, you know, I'm like, do I need to get a sign and go like dance out on the highway to try to get customers down there? But you know, it's just the business we're in, you know. Like sometimes people are in the mood for barbecue, sometimes they're not.
Sure.
So.
Sure. And what are your so how many are you operating 4 days a week?
Yeah, we're Thursday through Saturday 11 to 6, Sunday 11 to 4.
Okay.
We're wanting to do more, but we've got to do a few other things. Like we're talking about expanding down in that location in Burns and building some kind of outdoor dining
cool
area, like with a concrete slab covered, all that stuff. Just to, you know, help the customers out.
Provide an environment for people.
Yeah, provide a better environment for them. Because I know there's sometimes where people are just wanting to grab and go home and eat dinner, but sometimes they want to sit down and, you mm-hmm. know, have a conversation and eat or something.
Yeah.
So we've been in talks about that with the landlord about different stuff we can do over there. And
yeah.
And he's on board with it too. We just
cool.
got to
That's good.
Wait for the right time. So.
Yeah, and throw some cornhole boards out there and horseshoe and, you know, just random little things out there. Just give people something to do. Mm-hmm. I think people just like to get out of the house, especially nowadays. I mean, hell, past 2 years have been cooped up and things have been weird, and people just enjoy getting out and seeing other people and, you know, enjoy, especially where you're at, just enjoying the outdoors and eating outdoors. That's that's kind of something you don't get too much around here.
Yeah, and see, that was the scariest part about opening up. We opened up September 1st of 2020. You know, and it was leading into winter, so it was the year that, you know, COVID was at its worst, and and it was starting to get winter, so we opened up in the worst year and the worst time of the year, but the community, they blew us out of the water. Like,
that's so awesome.
Like, it was insane, the response we got just by opening up, and, like, I knew the new restaurant smell was going to wear off eventually. But for the length it stayed on and we stayed just swamped was absolutely incredible. And I couldn't be more thankful and more grateful to the community for that.
That's an amazing community for sure that has got a lot of interesting people that live there that have some great ideas and some great wherewithal. And it's just got a lot of potential. And, you know, it's easier for them to, you know, instead of driving into all the way into Dixon to get something to eat, you know, just pop over there and get some quality barbecue and take it back home to their family. You know, I know you kind of operate there as well too, but, the catering aspect, or maybe not catering, but, I guess kind of the food truck or mobile operations, I'll say that. So, is that something I know that you've dived into that as well too, but where are you, where is that taking you and what are you seeing when you're doing that?
I would love to be able to go mobile as well as our Burns location, but finding food trucks, like the two that I've had for the past events, I've either borrowed or rented from somebody just to have something out there. And, but just the response we get from that, like the street festival last year, it was insane. Like, I brought enough food to run my brick and mortar location for 2.5 days.
Wow.
We were sold out in 5.5 hours.
That's crazy.
And I mean, and it wasn't just me, it was the other vendors as well. Like, it was just insane. And, you know, you get people coming in, oh, you need to move to Dixon, oh, you need to move to Charlotte, need to move to White Bluff, something, you know. I mean, we've gotten support at every angle that we've looked at this from. You know, there's a lot of people that have our backs and, you know, that are on our team, you know, pushing us to try to do better and do more, I guess. But I wouldn't mind having, you know, a smaller food truck, nothing crazy, but, you know, something to set up at street festivals, you know, little pop-up events or something like that, you know?
Yeah, something that you know, it's obviously, it's kind of like it's like distributing your beer almost, you know, you get it out of that one location and you take it to others and you kind of just get that name recognition for it. And, well, I know tonight, I'm going tonight is the food truck, committee council meeting tonight, to go over the two proposed, deals for how or an if and when food trucks can come into Dixon and kind of what the regulations are around that. I think, I guess before I tell you what I think, I mean, what do you, you obviously operate in Burns, and what are your thoughts on, food trucks being able to come into the city limits of Dixon and operate?
I think it's an incredible idea.
Sure.
Because, like, you know, instead of having to go to Nashville every day and, you know, fight that market, you know, they can set up down here. Like, even if it's find a parking lot or a piece of land or something, and just have like a food trailer park day, you know, where everybody can go out and there's just a plethora of different foods to try. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, that have food trucks that you don't hear about a lot because they are in Nashville and they can't come down here. And you're obviously not going to drive to Nashville to go to a food truck.
Sure.
So I think it'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
Like, I've even thought about reaching out to a couple of them, and because I've got that big parking lot on my side, being like, hey, guys, you know, let's start the spring off, you know, three or four of them, whatever, you know, whatever I got room for. Hey, bring your rig, set up, let's make an event out of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that would take away from my business over there, but I think people are too worried about competing than they are working together on stuff like that.
And Burns, you can set up food trucks in Burns anywhere, can't you?
That I don't know.
I think you can. It's knowing Landon, I don't think he would care.
Yeah, I don't think he'd have a problem with it.
No. No, I'm with you on that point though, and I've heard all angles of the argument as far as just kind of what would happen, you know, this what if situation, and maybe not surprisingly, but an overwhelming amount of downtown business owners, obviously specifically restaurant owners, don't really care if food trucks come into town. You know, there's this idea that, you know, it's going to take away their business. Well, you know, I don't know about that. I think, you know, adding more variety, you know, a rising tide brings up all the ships, kind of thing.
Variety.
You know, and then there was the argument on property taxes. Well, they just bring in a truck, they don't have to pay property taxes. Well, you know, they've solved that with a fee option. You know, one of the proposals is an annualized fee, I think, of like, it's like $1,400 or $2,400, something like that. Or there's another option, I think, that's going to, hopefully this one will be the one that goes, because I know that it would almost be a deterrent for people to come in here, and it would be on a fiscal year basis too. It's not like you can come pay your fee for the year, you know, in December and expect it to go to next December. It would just be a month's worth. So if you're if you're a food truck and you want to come into Dixon, you in essence would have to come pay your fee in January to make it worth it. And they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, they could lose out on $2,400 or whatever it may be if they never came to Dixon.
Yeah.
But I know that there's a day rate one in the other proposal that's maybe 100 or a little bit over that, which is kind of on par with Columbia and Kingston Springs and Clarksville. They all range between $100 and $175 a day or something like that.
Yeah, those prices, those are definitely doable. You get into the, you know, $500,000 mm-hmm. prices, that's going to deter a lot of people.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think another one of the big thing from the city side, at least, is the policing of it. So, you know, and this is something that a lot of people don't think about. They're like, well, why don't we just say, you know, why don't we just say yes and let's do it? You know, let's just willy-nilly this whole thing and just let them do whatever they want. Well, the whole reason that we can't have food trucks anyway is that food trucks in the zoning regs is that is classified under a peddler class code. So there used to be back in the day a bunch of people that would just come and set up tents and sell leather wallets or belts or feathers or, you know, whatever the hell they were selling, and just causing a big issue. They just pop up anywhere, you know, so we had to put rules in place. And at that point, there was really, food trucks weren't really a thing, and there really hasn't been a push, you know, and up until the past 2 or 3 years for them to be able to come into town.
Yeah.
So now they're having to go back and kind of rethink some of those things and do, you know, a more specified definition of what a peddler may be, and then how the food trucks can operate. Well, should you let it pass, let's say somebody pulls into town and sets up without a permit, you know, who's in charge of, like, of laying down the law at that point?
Yeah.
You know, who's in charge of making sure that their, you know, their health inspection sheets are up to date, and, you know, that they're doing what they need to do, and, that their truck is in an operable manner to where if they set up and some bitch blows up, you know, the city doesn't want to be liable for that. Yeah. So, and as of right now, it's pretty much all fallen back into Jason Pilkington's lap, director of planning and zoning for the city of Dixon, which he's got enough going on, in my opinion, to have to deal with a lot of that. And there's not really enough manpower right now for him to kind of delegate that duty. You know, then you think about, well, what about police officers? Well, they've obviously got plenty to do as well, too. And they don't want to run around and check on food trucks. So, and then the parking situation downtown, there's really not a good spot except for that new city lot. That's a city lot that wouldn't really get in the way of a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And talking to a couple other food truck owners, they don't necessarily care about being downtown either.
Yeah.
You know, they'd rather be kind of maybe out on 46 if they could, or in the industrial park if they could, kind of thing. So
I had somebody ask me about setting up at one of the places in the industrial park, and they said their corporate policy on that is I wouldn't be able to go, because I was like, yeah, man, I'd love to come down there and serve you guys. But the company said that I wouldn't be able to set up just for that daily lunch shift. I would have to set up for the nighttime lunch shift as well to be able to get any of it.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
I never would have thought about that.
I didn't.
Equal opportunity,
I guess. I mean, I get it. But
yeah, I get it. It's just, yeah. It's like, damn, that's rocking a hard place right there.
I'm like, I'm already up there at, you know, 4:30 to 6 a.m., you know, and I don't want to have to go sit up there at midnight, you know, and finding somebody that would go up there and sell, that it'd be kind of hard. But
yeah.
Huh. I don't know, but...
And I know they talked about the... Or they had talked to the fair board as well. In my mind, if that situation were to have worked out, that would have been the best-case scenario. Because you've got that huge parking lot. You've got accessible bathrooms. You could just have a police car sit there, you know. They could just station someone there, and they wouldn't have to be mobile patrol and drive around and find these people and... you can have people just pull in and then circle back out, but I don't necessarily think the fair board wanted a lot of that liability. Yeah. You know, their insurance is already high enough given everything else they've got going on, and I think staging food trucks was just something they weren't really interested in at the time being. Now it's just going to take it actually happening. I don't have a doubt in my mind that it's going to happen. It's just, you know, where do the chips fall? It's a big push, and you know, I've talked to the mayor about it, and he says, what benefit is it going to bring to Dixon? Well, you're going to provide your citizens with what now Dixon has is really a lot of lacking food options.
Yeah.
You know, for a county as a whole, that's not, you know, a chain restaurant or fast food or something like that. And given obviously there's 7 days in the week, that, you know, it doesn't take too many months to really hit every single place.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the menus don't necessarily change or rotate. Some of them do. So you kind of get your fill within a year or so, and then you kind of just keep hitting the same spots. But to throw that variety in, and a lot of these food trucks have big social media followings too. So, you know, you let them come up here and set up and there's, you know, they've got 50,000 followers on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook or whatever it may be. And they're like, hey, we're in Dixon. I mean, it would, if I was a big food truck follower, you know, and I was, you know, in school or had the day off or something, and sure, let's just take a road trip to Dixon and see what it's all about. Let's go get some Maine's Cousin Lobster or whatever it may be. And, and enjoy the day up there. So, I mean, you're potentially, you've got some major, major marketing opportunities with the food truck stuff as well, too.
You're bringing them into seeing what else is available in Dixon. These all these mom and pop shops up and down Main Street. And, you know, tucked off in little holes, you know, that stuff that they'd never see if that food truck that they've eaten at 1,000 times in every other city they've been in comes to Dixon. So...
And hopefully move them out here, you know. And, you know, I don't know really what kind of the, I guess, median age is of people that eat at food trucks. But, you know, I would imagine it's anywhere between, you know, that 20 and 35, 40, you know, 45-year-old kind of age range there. And to kind of get those people just, again, it's, you know, it. In my line of business, you know, in anybody's line of business in sales, really is attention. You know, you could have the best pitch in the whole world, or you could be the best closer in the whole world, or have the best product, but nothing is going to get you sales or revenue or tax dollars like attention does, you know. And if you just keep bringing neat things to Dixon, and you could have, you know, and then you've got all of these food trucks that are used to Dixon and used to dealing with the city and how they work and what they're supposed to do, then you've got kind of this relationship with, you know, outside vendors and the city of Dixon. And then at that point, you know, it's fair game for, you know, a huge festival where you could really pull, like, some of these food trucks. You're like, oh yeah, I really don't want to come out here. I don't know much about Dixon. It's a small redneck town, whatever it may be. But if they've come in out here, or if they know people that have come out here and said, man, we're fucking killing it right now. You know, then you have a festival and you've got people banging down the door to pay, you know, X amount of money for a permit for this specific festival or whatever it may be. And, you know, now you've got more revenue. So, you know, the world's changing. You know, and people are changing too, and interests are obviously changing. And Dixon's been good with growth, and they've done a good job with controllable growth. I still see a little bit of resistance on some things coming in. I'm sure you do as well too. But it should be an interesting meeting. And I know there's going to be a ton of people there, so just kind of excited to see where that goes. So So kind of on that point, I guess, I know you kind of talked about expanding on your spot and potentially getting into the mobile operations, but, you know, perfect world for Wes, you know, 5-10 years down the road, you know, kind of, obviously it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. Nobody could have seen what's happened coming, but, you know what, you know, if you're sitting there with, you and your wife, Victoria, and your kids, you know what, where would you like Ott's to be at that point?
Well, I've actually got my 10-year plan written down and drawn out.
Cool.
It's on my desk. It actually started with a dream. You know, you have a dream, and you may remember bits and pieces of it. Mm-hmm. But I had a dream one day about a restaurant, and I remembered every single detail about that restaurant for like 3 days.
Wow.
And I was at work. I told my employees, I was like, hey, guys, I got to check out for a few minutes. Like, y'all take this, just serve the food, whatever. I went and sat in my truck, or out by the smokers, and I sat down with pieces of paper, and I drew this restaurant out, every single detail. I drew out the wall samples that I seen in it, the floor samples. I drew out everything, and it's sitting on my desk of what my restaurant will look like one day.
That's awesome.
And in 10 years, I've got it written down in the notebook that's underneath that I will have a dine-in restaurant that will look like what's on that paper. I'll be teaching barbecue schools.
Cool.
Having, you know, guest chefs, guest pit masters coming in and, you know, teaching classes and stuff like that. But that's where I see me. And well, I said that last year. So 9 years.
Cool. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Dreams are crazy. I've done a deep dive on kind of where dreams come from and you know, are they, you know, precognitive type things for events to come? And it's kind of up to the receiver of the dream to realize it or not, you know, kind mm-hmm. of deal, and to take it and put it on paper and, you know, have it as an actuality. You know, you've gotten it out of your head and on paper, and
I still remember every single detail about it.
That's awesome.
The only thing I didn't put in there is I remember standing in the middle looking over, there was a DJ booth in the wall. That won't be I don't know why that was up there, but that won't be in the restaurant.
That could be your classroom or something.
Yeah.
And I think you're on point too with the teaching. I'm the same exact way too. Like this podcast or the entertainment stuff I got going on, or just kind of business in general. I don't. When I wake up in the morning, it's not like how much can I get. You know, how much can I take in today? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, how much can I give. You know, and then obviously the return on that is, you know, in equal and opposite, you know, proportions. So when I sit down, same thing. I hadn't had a dream about it necessarily, but it's just this reoccurring idea that there will come a point where people are going to start. You know, I'm sure it will come for you as well too. Like, hey, can you teach me this?
Yeah.
You know, it's or you can kind of start out like, hey, I'm hosting a class, and here's what we're going to talk about. But yeah, that's the definite end goal for I think a lot of business owners as well too, is they get it to the point where the business can kind of run itself, and then they get it and they go out and they teach others, you know, maybe not necessarily specifically barbecue or just cooking in general. And I think bringing in those guest barbecue pit masters and everything else too mm-hmm. is a fantastic idea, because it just adds diversity to the entire situation.
Yeah. And like when I say teaching, I'm not, a lot of people misconstrue that. You know, I'm not saying I want to be teaching barbecue or I'm going to be teaching barbecue schools is because I think I'm the best and there's nobody else that can beat me, because obviously there is.
Sure.
Like, it would just be me teaching the way I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've learned is I've taken a lot of different people's perspective on it. I've watched a lot of people's videos, like Matt Pittman down in Texas, the Barbecue Pit Boys, Heath Riles, and Myron Mix, and a bunch of those. I've looked at a bunch of their stuff and how they do it, and I don't do anything exactly the way they do it. I've tweaked it to make it my own. I mean, and that's what I want to do. Like, if I teach you how to cook a brisket or how to smoke a brisket, and you're like, okay, well, that's good. That works. It tastes great. But what if I did this and try to make it
mm-hmm.
taste something else, you know? Like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah. Every artist steals from another artist. I mean, you have to. You just got to – and piece and just collage the whole thing. I mean, you're exactly right. It's that you show them kind of what you know, the basics, right? And then – you know, it's your hope that they take that out and they put their twist on it and they bring it back to you. Like, mm-hmm. hey, what do you think about this? This is crazy. And you can kind of learn from each other at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody benefits. And then, you know, another aspect to that same thing would be, you know, this is kind of a, I'm sure it may be with you as well, is is being able to invest in someone's dream that way as well too. I do have a little bit of real estate. It's not necessarily my passion. It's obviously nice little mailbox money, but being able to have someone approach me and say, "Hey, I've got this idea, and I really think it'll work, and it's a huge passion of mine," and to be able to kind of maybe not necessarily bring them under my wing. Again, I'm not the best of the best, obviously, but just to have somebody have a dream and have that kind of gap of maybe some capital or some know-how or whatever it may be, and just say, "Hey, you know, let's take this and run with it," and you know, help that person out, you know, along the way.
It may just take that, you know, that one person coming up to you, "Hey, I've got this idea. What do you think about this?" It may take you saying, "Well, that's a fantastic idea." That may unlock everything that they've been holding back, and then bam, they're this huge success, you know?
Yeah. And then everybody helps each other out. That's just what you were saying is, you know, people think way too much about competition these days, you know, and
there's a time for it. There's barbecue competitions all over the place. There's time for competition.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But daily operations, I mean, you got to be willing to help other people.
You have to. You have to, because it's going to come back to bite you in the ass at some point, and you know, you never really want to burn a bridge either, because you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could come to a point where that person has a terrible incident in their family and they need a job and know how to do barbecue, and so y'all have had a good relationship, you know, whatever it may be. And same thing that happens downtown. I mean, I know that for a while, and you know, maybe still, Justin was smoking back alley amber beer grains. You know, Elizabeth would give some ingredients to different places, and everybody just like the plasticware, everybody just kind of lives symbiotically, which is huge, and a big shout out to this town for doing that as well too. You know, everybody, you know, as it grows, there's obviously going to be some other things that come into town, and you know, it'll hurt your business, but it drives innovation. You know, you can't just be, you know, cock of the walk the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And just expect everything's going to be gravy and nothing's ever going to change, and if somebody comes into town, get all pissed off about it and try to run them out of town or whatever it may be.
Yeah. See, it's like McAllister's coming to town. I'm like, "Man, I'm so glad they're here. They're amazing."
Yeah.
But then on the other cheek, I'm like, "Oh, crap, I hate that they're here because they're so good."
Right. It is a good spot. I've been down there once. It is on the other side of town, though.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't. 46 right now is getting crazy. I mean, there's just so many people that live here. There's a it's like a 40-60 split, really, of people that leave Dixon to go work, but people from outside of Dixon come to work here. So, and obviously that being a main thoroughfare, it's gotten absolutely crazy. But I am glad that they're here. I did used to eat a lot there in Knoxville when I had a place on the Strip, but definitely a good addition to Dixon for sure. Absolutely.
For sure.
So I guess just to get a little personal on it, so you're open, you know, 4 days a week right now, looking to open a little bit more, but, you know, kind of in your, what leisure time you may have, what is Mr. Otts like to get into? You know, what are your hobbies, you know, what do you enjoy hanging out with the family?
Whenever the weather's nice, I like to go out and pretend like I know how to play golf.
Cool.
You know, we go out there and have a little fun, a couple of us get together, and that's about it. And, you know, Tuesdays I go up there, put my order up. If I got to make sauce, I start making it then. And Wednesdays I start cooking. Mondays I try my best to not have to go up there. You know, I may be doing business stuff at home, you know, whether it be going over books or, you know, looking at sales or something like that, you know, but I try not to overdo my stuff with sales, because I've read a few or listened to a few things about that. About checking stuff daily, you'll end up driving yourself insane. You know, you need to break it down quarterly or you know, monthly or something like that to not drive yourself insane. But yeah, just playing golf, hanging out with the kids when I can, because my day's off there at school, and then by the time they get home, it's, you know, homework, chores, dinner, bed, you know.
You get plenty of them to deal with, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which they're all self-sufficient.
Sure.
Until they say, well, they're supposed to be self-sufficient.
that's what they think they are, at least. Yeah. So kind of just this balance between, you know, your work-life kind of balance of sorts, you know, ever since you've started, I guess maybe for those that, you know, always like, you know, somebody that's, you know, a couple years into their business and can still kind of remember the starts and the ins and outs and the good things and the bad.
Maybe any kind of suggestions that you may have or things that you've gone through as far as maybe a low that you kind of overcame, or you know, something that happened unexpectedly that, you know, benefited the business?
I know it's hard, but you know, with whenever you start any kind of business, you're going to be married to it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to find that balance with your family. You know, whether it be, you know, leaving everything to the side and hanging out with them while they're awake, you know, spend a, you know, 5-10 minutes with your kids, mm-hmm. with your wife, whatever. And, you know, after everybody goes to bed, you know, sit down and do your business stuff or something. But, not trying to get too big too fast. Mm-hmm. That was one of the main things. And I think starting in that spot is what truly helped, because we weren't on the main highway. I feel like if we were on the main highway, we would have just been absolutely bombarded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would have ended up falling on my face.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the employee situation, you know, we haven't always had a lot of people. Yeah. You know, we've got our core couple that stick with us and, you know, make all this stuff possible. But with some lows, like, don't get too stuck on that high whenever you first start.
Yeah.
Like, don't think it's going to be like that forever, because if you do, once you have that first low or that first day of really no sales at all, you start second guessing yourself. And I did that. I was like, does my food suck? You know, did I mess something up? Did I make somebody mad or anything? And then, you know, I just had to sit back and think. I'm like, people aren't going to want my food all the time.
Sure.
You know,
as much as you may think so, absolutely.
Yeah, as much as I would love them to, I know they're not.
Yeah.
You know, which I've got some regular customers that come in every, you know, on certain days, you know, like the tick on a clock, you know, they're there to get their certain food, and I can count on those. But no, just try not to grow too fast. Try not to do too much. Like, yeah. That's
just ride that wave.
Yeah.
You know, and deal with it as it comes. And you know, and a lot of people they take a lot of things too seriously. You know, obviously, yeah. You've got to be serious. You've got to be somewhat structured, you know, not too terribly structured, because then you're just rigid and you can't be malleable to the given situations that the day may bring. But you know, one thing that somebody once told me, specifically talking about this town, is that should something happen, A, you're not as important as you think you are, you know, and B, most controversy in this town lasts 3-4 days, a week, maybe 2 weeks max, you know, and then people forget about it. Somebody else screws something up, you know, and mm-hmm. something else happens, something good, something bad, whatever it may be. And so, you know, should something go wrong, you know, it is a small town, but, you know, these little niche group of people, you know, they may tell their friends and, you know, they may take their advice or they may not, but you've still got 56,000 mm-hmm. other people,
yeah.
you know, that are in your potential pool of clientele, you know. And I've been running Trivia at Furnace now for, God, almost 70 weeks, you know, and I've definitely had my ups and downs and people not show up. Mm-hmm. And I had the same thing happen. Like, we were going from 50, 60, 70 people showing up every single Thursday to like 20, you know, and it wasn't necessarily even December. And, you know, I'd steadily kind of increased what I was doing and tweaked that craft and added lights and just anything I could to make it a show. And people still weren't coming in. So you usually have to kind of sit down and think about what you're doing. So you just kind of add and you twist and you play with it, you know,
and you can't be scared to ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of people don't do that either.
Yeah. I was like that.
Yeah.
Like, even asking my wife for help, you know, let alone anybody else that's in the same industry I'm in for help.
Yeah. Initially, you almost feel kind of embarrassed, you know, because you're like, mm-hmm. I should know this kind of thing, or I should be able to figure it out. But sometimes things just don't click.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been the same way too.
There's still stuff I don't know that I'm learning every day. So
are you reaching out to mentors and just talking to people and all that?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, people willing to help.
Oh yeah, I've talked with Jason Perigin a lot.
Cool,
and he's helping steer me in the right direction.
Cool, Yeah, and, he's pretty well experienced for sure. I know he does a lot of competitions and
he actually introduced me to all the guys down at the Jack in in Lynchburg this past year, which I was only able to go down there for a day. But this year, even though we're gonna have a newborn with us, we're gonna try our best to get down there and stay the whole week with with helping set up the vendor spots, help the competitors, helping lay out their spots, and like there's just so much that goes into it. There's so many moving parts that I just like, it's just incredible that people don't see that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is going to be cool this year is like one of the barbecue icons is going to be down there like doing what I was doing, helping set up spots and stuff. Like it's a Tuffy Stone. He's like, he's one of the barbecue gurus and
the man.
Yeah. And he just wants to come down and help do that stuff.
Wow.
And
Tuffy Stone. That sounds like a barbecue pit master there.
it's just incredible, you know, that somebody of his caliber, that just shows how humble he is. You know, I've got books. I've been on shows. I've been around whatever. I'm not above coming down and spray painting out spots for competitors and stuff like that. And I just think it's cool, you know. I have my little man down there. And, you know, before he knows barbecue, all the who's who of barbecue will know who he is.
Yeah,
gives me hope for the future for him.
Definitely a good reference to have too, for sure. Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that either. You know, some people feel like they obviously delegation is key. You know, you can't do everything all by yourself. But
for sure.
But remembering where you came from, you know, is huge too. And to kind of get back to your roots, like this morning we had our Downtown Dixon Association meeting and. You know, all the events that we put on, you know, throughout the year was kind of our planning meeting. And this past year was really the first year the DDA has been formed and has done the Spring Festival. You know, we participated in Old Timers Day. And of course we had all the Christmas stuff too, but there was about five or six people that did all of that, you know, and there's 80 members in the DDA. And so that was kind of our meeting today was we developed some committees as well, too. Just the same thing, just spraying lines for vendors. And, you know, I think it's super important for people to know how the sausage is made, you know, for lack of a better description. And then, again, teach it to people, but don't ever forget where you came from. If you need to lend I don't give a damn if you're the president or not, you know, if there's a lending hand that's needed, you know, to grab a hold of those humble roots, like you were saying, and to really get down and do that, it takes a special person to do that.
Yeah. You know, hearing the stories of him, you know, like doing that, wanting to come down, you know, it kind of humbled me in a sense. Cause you know, it did kind of blow my head up a little bit when we first started, you know, it just did.
Sure.
Would have been anybody, but you know, just hearing stories like that and meeting the people I've met in this last year and a half, like it's been more humbling than anything, and it kind of grounded me back down, you know.
Yeah, you kind of realize how when somebody makes it, how they act, and you kind of emulate that a little bit, and bring, like you said, just every artist steals from the other artists, and it's just a big group of people.
You're like all these people you see in magazines and on shows, they're really just normal people.
They put their pants on one leg at a time, don't they? Yeah. For the most part, for those that do wear pants.
Yeah.
Way of the world we're living in today. Who knows?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're almost at an hour, man. Can you believe that?
Mm. Time flies.
Time flies when you're having fun. That's right. Mm-hmm. Cool. What do you, I mean, do you have anything else? Did you kind of, you want to plug your social medias in?
We have a Facebook. It's Ott's Barbecue. Okay. And same as Instagram. I'm not as active on Instagram even though I need to be.
Sure.
But I did start a TikTok.
Cool.
Just
it's huge, man.
Oh yeah. And I've got one of my daughters, we've got two videos on there. I had her help me pick out the songs to go on them.
Cool.
So
cool.
I may hire one of them to start doing the videos. So
yeah, and the kids, I mean, they can operate that stuff like nobody's business. And it's obviously the most downloaded and most popular social media app right now. And I've seen, I was reading some stories on some breweries that were doing that, and they're just seeing a massive increase in not even necessarily walk-in business, but distribution business or, you know, online orders or to-go, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And all they're really doing is the process, you know, the brewing process and the mistakes that they make or the good things that happen or new beers that are coming out mm-hmm. and the ingredients they put in there and kind of how they do it. Now, it takes, like, you're right, you're going to have to delegate that because I've done that. There's a girl in town that started doing TikTok videos for businesses that I can put you in touch with if you want. She can, she did one for trivia that turned out great. And I just think that, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying. And it's, you know, I particularly don't necessarily like social media. I mean, I enjoy kind of keeping up with things. You know, I'll post and advertise for trivia and stuff like that, but, it's not something I'm interested in doing myself. Yeah, so find somebody to do it.
That's like, you know, ever since we started this, that's about 98% of my Facebook post is me sharing the business post. And that's really all it's used for.
Yep. It's working. You know, just imagine if you added a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this.
A little sparkle to it and a little music and have the kids come up with a TikTok dance for Ott's Barbecue.
Barbecue TikTok dance.
I'm holding briskets or something. Yeah.
I think you're onto something there.
They start a trend.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I do appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy. I know you're sure you've got some things to do. And thanks for dropping in. Thank you guys again for listening. I surely appreciate it. Be sure to like, subscribe, check them out on Facebook, and go give their couple TikTok videos a like, and you know, subscribe to his page, and just like everybody that we have on here, local business owners, people like that, show them support. You know, they live in your county, they feed you. You know, they feed into our economy as well too, with tax dollars and you know, property tax and everything else as well. And it's people like Wes that keep this place going around. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and until next time, peace. Thanks again to Your Vibes Entertainment for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking to boost your revenue, showcase your company, or just want to provide high vibe entertainment for your family, friends, employees, or clients, please reach out to them directly on Facebook or Instagram at Your Vibes Entertainment. Shoot them an email at yventertainmentservicesllc@gmail.com or give the owner, Michael, a call directly at 615-330-3236. If you're interested in sponsoring an episode, please reach out to me directly via email at yourvibespodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and always remember, stay vibey, my friends.